Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5, the game, hour number three here on a Monday. Nick Braden, D-Mace, and Marquise. Stick to sports coming up at 8:45. Nashville SC conversation at the bottom of the hour, but for the next 30 minutes, we get back to what I thought was a very predictable outcome yesterday, and that is the Tennessee Titans and Carolina Panthers. Carolina wins 30-20, and as we started the show 2 hours ago, I would love to come in here and start yelling and screaming and calling for people's heads, but when I said all week that Carolina was going to win by 7 to 10 points, I mean, I kind of had the foresight that this was going to happen. So, I think at this point it's more apathy than anger.
Yeah, and it's not difficult to project things, you know, like, hey, the offensive line's going to not be able to protect the quarterback against one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. We could see that coming, and it took place. You know, again, I know the Ryan Tannehill love affair was short-lived. Ryan Tannehill is Ryan Tannehill. He's just a guy, like Mariota, just a guy. And, you know, the defense, I think, surprisingly, right, that's the most points they've given up all season. So maybe the defense was a bigger surprise than we anticipated. Malcolm Butler hurt on a touchdown catch and looks like he's going to we'll find out today, I guess, if he needs surgery or not on the wrist. And then to me, the surprise is the game plan. The thing that stands out to me was the first half game plan. Shut out in the first half 4 times this year. They are not good in the first half, which means they come into a game ill-prepared with an inappropriate game plan. And I don't know if that's all Arthur Smith, if that's the offensive line. You mix in the quarterback and you mix in a head coach who's a defensive guy. I don't know what the formula – where the breakdown in the formula is taking place, but the play caller is in charge of designing the offense as far as I can tell. And Derrick Henry got 2 carries in the first half against the 27th best rushing defense in the NFL. They got 0 points. They came out and ran the ball in the first half on the first drive, and they scored a touchdown. To me, it makes it so obvious to say, what are your plans coming into games? Because they're not working right now.
D-Mace, in 2019, it's hard to fathom that you could go 4 first halves out of 9 games without scoring a point in a day and age where the NFL wants offense, they promote offense, they don't allow you to play defense. You can't hit players here. You can't hit players there. There's flags left and right. The defense is at such a disadvantage. You know, this is not like when you played in 2002 when it was an unbelievably violent game and defenses were roaming. And I mean, this day and age, you should be able to score points, and they can't do it in the first half of 4 games.
Yeah, it's just unfortunate that they haven't been able to score points, because their defense has done such a good job at holding opponents, at least prior to the last 2 weeks, to holding opponents under 20 points. And you haven't been consistently been able to put up over 20 points as an offense. Now you're starting to see sort of chinks in armor in regards to the defense, because they're tired. They got guys banged up. They're losing guys. War of attrition usually starts to happen, you know, right about now. Whichever team stays healthiest the longest has a better shot at not only making the playoffs, but, you know, getting to the Super Bowl. And right now it seems like all of the pressure has been put on the defense to hold it up, and now it's starting to wear on them. So the offense, you know, they got to start picking it up. And, you know, it's not going to get any easier, because they're going to have to score tit for tat with Kansas City. Can they do that? I don't know. The way the offensive line has played, you know, how can you give up on average 3 sacks a game? That's what you're giving up, close to 4 sacks a game on average. How do you do that as an offensive line? Are you just you just might as well, like I said last week, you just might as well fall down the first 4 plays and get it over with.
And think about it. It'd be one thing if they didn't invest in their offensive line, but Taylor Lewan makes a boatload of money. Roger Saffold makes a boatload of money. Jack Conklin was an all-pro a few years ago. They've got guys that have either accomplished something or are being paid to accomplish something. Either way you slice it and dice it, they're just a terrible unit.
Well, and here's what's strange is, so last year they took a step back and they struggled. Well, okay, you could go, all right, Jack Conklin's knee's not fully healthy. There's a reason maybe they're not as good at that position. Okay, we don't have a right guard. All right, we don't have a left guard. Okay, fine. Then you can start looking at this year and you go, all right, Taylor Lewan, okay, he's fine. He's set at left tackle. Jack Conklin is set. He's back healthy at right tackle. We've invested $44 million in the left guard, and we used the 3rd-round pick on a right guard. They're like, I know it takes time for groups to gel, and then of course the Lawan steroid suspension or whatever PED suspension, Osterine, whatever. It, you know, that slowed the entire process down, and that, you know, set them behind the eight ball for the first four games. But that's a part of the equation. And so you look at this group and you go, you can understand last year looking at this and saying, all right, they got worse. We need to fix it. Well, they used resources to address it, and it hasn't worked. But again, my bigger concern about yesterday's game isn't necessarily, like, we knew the Panthers were going to be good at getting to the quarterback because they're the second best team in the NFL at pressuring the quarterback behind only the Patriots, who also struggled yesterday, by the way. I don't know if anybody noticed that. But your game plan should have been to counteract that, which is, all right, you're going up against a team that's given up 130 yards on the ground per game, one of the worst rushing defenses in the NFL. Why are you throwing the ball on every possession in the first half? Why is Deion Lewis getting dedicated drives in the first half? And Deion Lewis wasn't bad yesterday. Deion Lewis was okay. Outside of the fumble, he was okay. It doesn't mean that he should be the way you start the second drive of the game or whatever. Like, and then your field goal kicker, God forbid, make a field goal at some point during the year. Somebody, whatever name it is, Santos, Parkey, suck up, who cares, make a kick. I don't know. To me, it's the game plan in the first half. Like, if that game was just 10-7 at halftime or 17-7 at halftime, and then you come out and you go down the field and you drive and you score to make it 17-14, if they had just managed one scoring drive in the first half, 17-14 in the third quarter, you feel like, all right, you're in the game. It's manageable. You can make some plays. Maybe you call the game differently. You know, you continue to run the football. I don't know. Like, there was opportunity there, and the game plan just didn't do it. I don't know. Like, it's just frustrating to see something so obvious.
Oh yeah,
and for them just to not go after it. I don't know.
Just think about this. Derrick Henry had two carries in the first half for 4 yards against a defense that you should be able to. Well, you said they were 27th
in the league. 27th in the league against the run.
I'm going to give you a little comparison, a little analogy here, just to show you and highlight how bad of coaching malpractice that is. Because now I'm actually getting mad just thinking about that.
Oh.
Two carries. I didn't want to blow a gasket today, but now I might have to. There's not a college kid in a dorm room across America right now skipping out on his class on a Monday morning to play Madden on the Xbox One that if he selected the Tennessee Titans to use in an online game against another stoned college kid across America in a campus that would use Derrick Henry only two times in the first half.
Yeah, that's true.
Little Bobby, 18 years old, away from his parents for the first time, sitting in a dorm room, drinking Mountain Dew Code Red, would give Derrick Henry the ball more times in the first half than the Tennessee Titans offensive coordinator.
Yeah, I mean, and what's funny,
like, I'm shaking now, I'm so angry.
I know, and it's okay, calm down. What's funny is that Arthur Smith, I guess it took him a half of football to realize
God
the same thing, because then he gave Derrick Henry 7 carries on the first possession of the second half.
And what'd they do? They went right down the field.
They went right down the field and scored a touchdown. So you're going, oh, wait a second. This would have worked from the beginning. I don't know. That's the frustrating part. And it's not just this game. You mentioned this earlier. It's like they used the wrong game plan in the wrong game. They ran the ball right at the Ndamukong Suh and Vita Vea against Tampa and got negative yards like 9 times in that game. And yet they continued to do it. And we even said, hey, good job doing that, because what it does is it allows you to set a play action and you're forcing the defense to stay honest, right? Cliche, cliche, cliche.
Yep.
But, like, at some point you knew you were going to have to attack a bad passing defense against Tampa because you couldn't run the football against them. You knew it was all to set up something else. This is one of those where the play action will work as long as Luke Kuechly and Shaq Thompson are biting on the play action fake, because then you might actually find some room to throw the football. But if you're just going to drop back and pass, that's what Carolina wants you to do. So I don't know. That was the frustrating part. It's just it feels like this offense, not defense, that the offense is ill-prepared when the game starts, and that is a concern.
615-737-1025, Titans calls when we come back here on Morning Drive. It is Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Braden, D-Mace Marquise with you. Stick to sports coming up at 8:45. Darren McFarland at 9 o'clock. We'll talk some Preds with him. We'll go around the NFL. We got the big finish. A lot to do for the next hour and 40 minutes. Your Titans call 615-737-1025. Evan is joining us to talk about the Tennessee Titans offense, and I use that word very loosely, the offense. It's kind of it's a very offensive look to the eye. Go ahead, Evan.
Yeah, offense is very generous of you to call it that. But I think what we're seeing is the consequences of going all in on Marcus Mariota. Because in my opinion, Arthur Smith was given the job for the sake of continuity, because that's been everyone's biggest, you know, blank check to write to Marcus. Well, he hasn't had continuity. He's had different offensive coordinators every year. But Arthur Smith is not the guy for the job, because Derrick Henry is not the second coming of Tecmo Bowl Bo Jackson, right? He's a running back. He's got strength. He has weaknesses. But when you give him a hole, he's going to hit that hole, by God, and he is going to get to the second level and make some big games. And it boggles my mind that Derrick Henry has not been coached to evolve to be a pass catcher, because we've seen all season Deion comes in, or if Derrick comes in, well, they're going to, you know, he's going to run, or he's going to pass pro, or he's not going out of the backfield to catch the ball. And that is, I think, an indictment against the coaching staff. And if you look at the staff, nobody on this staff has any amount of head coaching experience whatsoever. And I don't, like, I hate seeing Vrabel put in these situations where he's given, like, complete reins of the team, because he needs help. He is a rookie, well, not a rookie, he's a new head coach that needs some guidance. And we've seen throughout the season, whether it's clock management issues or game time prep, there are very clear signs of a struggling head coach that needs some help, and he's just not getting that. So whether that's, you know, on John Robinson, what have you, you're absolutely right. It's so frustrating to see this team, which has talent and should be better than they are, struggle week in and week out.
Evan, we appreciate the call. And let me just go back to what he said in the beginning. Mm-hmm. With Arthur Smith got the job for the sake of continuity with Marcus Mariota. And that was something that I harped on for days on this show last spring when they made that decision. Because, like I said back then, you could not convince me that Arthur Smith was the most qualified guy or the best option for the job. He got the job for the sake of, you know, Marcus and comfort and being used to this and that. There were other guys out there with, quote, like you like to say, skins on the wall calling plays.
Well, yeah. I don't think Arthur, they made a huge push for Roman. And that's the offensive coordinator for the Baltimore Ravens.
Has he had any success this year?
Yeah, and Baltimore paid him, and he chose to stay in Baltimore.
Well, I wanted the guy that Baltimore said no thanks to that Greg Roman basically pushed out, which was Marty Morningway.
Yeah, Marty Morningway.
And one of the
Marty
guys
Morningway,
I wanted, away. John DeFilippo, is now calling plays for Gardner Minshew.
Yeah, so, I mean, they had their shot, or they took their shot at getting certain guys, and it just didn't work out. So they felt that, okay, if we can't get the guy that we want, then let's stick with some continuity and hire Arthur Smith. Again, I just think he, like Vrabel, is learning on the fly. Vrabel was learning on the fly to be a head coach last season, and it seems like there are still things he is learning as a head coach. And then you couple that with a guy who's never – call plays in the NFL with a second-year head coach. That is just – and listen, Arthur Smith, I mean, he's not a bad play caller, but I just think if you have the situation that you have, meaning the Tennessee Titans, I think you are better hiring a more seasoned play caller, because you're not – basically, your quarterback is a lame duck quarterback because he's on the last year of his deal. Your offensive line is bad. You know, they're coming off a bad season, and you drafted a guy and you brought in another guy, and you don't know if this thing is going to mesh the way it's supposed to. And then, you know, do you have enough playmakers on that offense? So I just think it's not a bad situation for Arthur Smith. It's just not an ideal situation for Arthur Smith. And you can see that, you know, he's learning on the fly. Again, I don't think he's a bad play caller. I just think that he's working with what he got.
I don't think he was hired. I don't think the reason he was hired was continuity. I think it was part of the equation. I think, to your point, Derek, they wanted other guys. Mm-hmm. They went and tried to get other people. And they knew all along that if they missed on anybody out there, they knew they could hire. They knew Arthur Smith would say yes, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody knows Arthur Smith was going to say yes. He's put in his time. He had worked for five different head coaches. He had been around. He'd coached different parts of the team. Mm-hmm. Players loved being around him. He had sort of earned his time, right? It doesn't mean he's going to be successful, but he had sort of earned his time. You know, the offensive playbook staying the same and the language staying the same was certainly a positive for the quarterback, you know, for Marcus. And so that was clearly a part of the equation. I don't think it was the reason they hired him. I think the reason they hired him is that Greg Roman said no. Like, I think the reason they hired him is that other people said no. And that he was one of their better options at that time. And, oh, by the way, part of the positives is that there's some continuity with the quarterback and we don't have to change the playbook or the verbiage or whatever. But along with that came risk of, well, what are you going to be? And we said this the second he was hired. We said, you do not know how good somebody is at calling plays until you're in the fire, until you're in and live bullets are flying and you have to design on 3rd and 8 in the fourth quarter and you're down by 3. You've got to have a play. And it's got to be like a feeling. It's just a gut, innate ability. I don't think you can just you can learn and get better as a play caller, but I think you either have it or you don't. Like it's sort of like a great, you know, like a great shot in hockey or an arm in baseball or football. You kind of like if you're a 99 mile an hour pitcher, that's just a God given gift. Like you can't go from 92 miles an hour to 99 miles an hour because you practice really hard. Like you either shoot 92% from the free throw line or you shoot 65% from the free throw line. Like, can you get a little bit better? Yeah, but you're not going to go from 70% to 90% because you practice. It's just a God given thing, and I think play calling in football is a God given. There's just an innate ability to see how a game is unfolding, understand what the defense is doing, know how to predict what they are doing, and then have a plan in place to counteract what they're doing. And oh, by the way, preparation is a huge part of this because clearly the preparation part of it's what we're missing because this team is terrible in the first half on offense in general. With Marcus or Tannehill, they're bad. The only reason they were even in the Tampa Bay game is that they were given the football inside the 10-yard line twice.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just call it what it is. Like there was no sustained offensive drives from the Titans against the Bucs at any point during the game until the fourth quarter when it mattered, and there was one really good drive. But when you're given the ball on the 7-yard line, you know, Ryan Tannehill makes one play and Jonnu Smith makes a big play and they score a touchdown. That's really important. Being good in the red zone is important. But, you know, you're gifted points in that situation. You're not going to be given that every week. And they weren't given it this week and they had no adjustment in the first half. It took them till halftime to make the adjustment.
11 penalties, 4 sacks, 3 turnovers yesterday. And D-Mace, you pointed it out early in the show in the first or second segment, way back in the 6 o'clock hour, that this defense has really no margin for error. They're like a pitcher that knows they need to go out and pitch 7 1/3 or 8 innings and have 2 runs or less because that pitcher knows he has no run support. And you even alluded to it earlier that, you know, eventually you're going to have that little bit of a divide where the defense says, hey, offense, you're not holding up your end of the bargain.
Yeah, and I mean, they'd never make it public because it does nothing for the team if that becomes public. But there is, you know, thoughts in a locker room based upon my experience. Not to say that it's the 5 vibe in the locker room, but they're like, listen, we're holding up our end of the bargain. You know, why isn't the offense putting up points? You don't have to put up a lot. Just put up 23 points, then we're going to hold a team under 20. Or right at 20. And it's proven their defense, minus these last 2 games, have been just that. They've been holding opponents under 20 points. And if the offense can't put up 21 points, 23 points consistently, you know, every week, then, I mean, eventually the defense, it starts to wear on everybody. And now you're seeing the last 2 weeks where, you know, the defense is just tired. Teams are starting to figure it out. You know, come November and December and early January, this is what separates the good team from everybody else, is that, you know, the teams that have problems or are one-dimensional, they start to separate themselves from the good teams that can do it on both sides of the ball. Very seldom do you have a team that is just so heavily, you know, whether it's offense. Now, if it's offense, in Kansas City, they were a bad defensive team, but they were averaging 100 points a game, so it was hard to keep up with that. But, you know, for the Titans is you're not scoring points, and you expect the defense to come out every day and be flawless, well, every game and be flawless. Well, I mean, I'm sorry to say it's not going to happen. And as the season goes on, guys get injured, guys get tired. it starts to get worse, and the defense starts to just it's like, man, what more do we need to do? We can't play perfect every game. We did it for y'all for 8 games, and look where it got us. We can't. I mean, we're gonna try to do it, but we lost our best defensive back. One of our linebackers is hurt. I mean, we're losing guys, and y'all can't help us out. I hate to say it, it's going to be bad, man. It really is, especially if another guy goes down on defense. They can't afford that.
One chapter came to a close on Saturday night. A new chapter will be written in 2020. That is next here on Morning Drive. It is Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good to have you in here on a Monday. Nick Braden, D-Mace, and Marquise. Stick to Sports is coming up at 8:45. We're going to actually get to Nashville SC in one moment. One chapter closed on Saturday night. A new one will be written. In fact, a new book will be written coming up in 2020. Let's squeeze in here Dave real quick, who wants to talk Titans. Dave, you're on Morning Drive.
Hey, good morning, fellas. I want to ask you guys this really quickly, get your thoughts on it. I've been trying to put my finger on it for a little while. What's wrong with the Titans? And you look at it on paper, and as you guys said, individually, offensive line, for example, they're great players, but as a unit, they are absolutely awful. They're paying money for guys. There's A.J. Brown. There's Adoree Jackson. There's other guys who, when you look at them, you should say this guy should be a great player, but they're just not here with the Titans. And I wonder if it's the culture there and if it's also a bit of the intangibles. When we talk about things like drive and a will to win, I look at the Titans, I see a lot of journeyman players, I see a lot of good guys, but I don't see a special player. I look at McCaffrey, I think of him as a special back. And as much as I love Derrick Henry, he's just a great back, but he's not special. I think that run that McCaffrey did yesterday, that stop that he did to turn the corner, it's special. And I just don't see us having those guys, and I don't see our culture developing that passion for winning. Just the way that I look around the league, I'm watching games yesterday and see guys fired up on the sidelines, looking at Mahomes after that kick, and then just the drive and the passion there. I don't see that with the Titans. I see a lot of good fellas, and I see a good football team, but not a special team. And maybe that has something to do with where we are now.
Well, I mean, Dave, those are two things that I've pushed back on this show many times, where they've got a lot of good players, but maybe Jeffrey Simmons will be this guy. But I've been dying to see game-changing impact players. I don't think they have them. And then the whole culture thing. Like, I know you guys gave me a bunch of crap for wanting Antonio Brown and wanting this guy and that guy. And you guys always say, well, John Robinson's building a culture. And I just put my feet up and I say, well, what is the Titans' culture?
Well,
mediocrity?
I think that's a fair complaint on your part. I will say, like, yesterday, for example, on the fourth down play call, like, McCaffrey's a special player. I'm not arguing against that.
Sure.
But on the fourth down play call where the game is 3-0, and on fourth down, Christian McCaffrey's out of the backfield and Kyle Allen hits him on the flat route, right? You don't have to be special to execute that play. That's Norv Turner. That is Norv Turner calling a far smarter, better play than anything Arthur Smith did. And is Kyle Allen better than Ryan Tannehill? Probably not.
No.
So what's the difference? Deion Lewis could have run that route. Deion Lewis would have been wide open and would have caught that pass. To me, the difference was Norv Turner. Norv Turner made the right call with the right plays and got the players into the right positions to succeed. And I'm not trying to hang this all around Arthur Smith's neck, because the offensive line is bad. I don't believe the quarterback's that good. The receivers aren't getting open. Delanie Walker didn't play. Like, we can go down the list. It's all Derrick Henry is sort of a one-dimensional back, but he's very good at that one dimension, and you didn't use it yesterday. We can go down the list of this stuff, but that play call to me stuck in my head. And even Titans players were like, yeah, that was a great call. Like, after the game, they were like, dude, they just totally beat us on that play call, which has nothing to do with execution. That has everything to do with, I know what you're thinking, and I'm going to outsmart you. And that's what Norv Turner did on that play. Now, again, that was a short field. They turned the ball over, and it was a short field, I guess. They got the ball in, like, the 15-yard line. But, again, on a 4th-and-2, a situation where this defense has been great all season, right, 4th-and-short, Norv Turner just totally out-schemed him. And I don't ever get the feeling that this offensive staff, I'll put the whole staff together, this offensive staff is going to do that.
You've been around long enough. What is the Titans' culture?
An inconsistent culture, mediocrity. That's what it is. That's what it has been. Even 9-7 is not, it's mediocre. It's not, that's why they, you know, that's why the whole mantra going from good to great, because they know, you know, 9-7 just ain't going to cut it. You know, 9-7 will get you fired. Consistent 9-7s will get you fired. That's what it will get you. It will say, yes, I had a winning team, but no, I am not the person that's going to elevate this team to pass 9-7. That's what 9-7 is going to get you. It's almost as bad as being, you know, 4-12, so to speak.
It works for 2 years.
3-13.
It works for 2 years. It works for two years. If you get to the playoffs.
It works for 2 years when your organization has been, you know, laughing stock. But then after that, it's like, okay, we need more. We need you to do more. And 9-7 last year, and possibly worse than 9-7 this year, just not going to cut it. So the culture of this team is they have an inconsistent culture. They have a culture of, you know, we play good, you know, one game, then we play bad two games, then we play good again, then we beat a team we're not supposed to beat, or many say we shouldn't beat, then we lose against teams we should beat. You can't survive like that as a head coach in this league. You just can't. Eventually, the owner will say, I need more from you. I need more from the GM. That's why I asked Corey that question. Like, you know, if this team finishes worse than 9-7, does the clock then start? His answer was, no, the clock already started. And I believe him. Mm-hmm. The clock has already started on the GM. I don't think, maybe not the head coach, but he hired him. So,
no, that's the point. Like, the GM, the second he announced Mike Vrabel as the head coach, the clock started.
Yeah.
And then the next big chapter of that is the quarterback. So your two big decisions as a GM, obviously there's a million of other decisions you got to get right. And I think by and large he's done a good job drafting. The draft is not where he's been bad. The free agent signings have not been his best area of strength. And we'll find out what he does with the quarterback. If he goes and picks the right quarterback, that will make Vrabel look like the right coach, and then they'll win games. But if they don't get the right quarterback and they draft, you know, Justin Herbert with the 14th pick, which, again, I don't think they're going to – not taking Herbert because he's an Oregon player, I think, is a dumb thing to do. You should not take him because you don't think he's a good quarterback. But if they take a guy who's 12 overall and he's Mitchell Trubisky and he's, you know, below what Marcus gave you for a couple of years, then – that's it for John Robinson, right? I mean, his career is probably going to be judged on Mike Vrabel and the quarterback decision coming up, whatever that looks like.
So Nashville SC's season came to a close on Saturday night as Gary Smith's club lost in the semifinals of the USL playoffs. But, you know, one door closes, another door opens, and that door that is going to open in 2020 is the MLS.
Yeah, and certainly a great run. You would have loved to have seen one more win in the Eastern Conference Championship setting, which would have been a really cool situation for them. They fall 1-0 to Indy 11, a rival there. And listen, it was a tough match. You know, give Indy credit, they won the game. But like you said, it was a successful two-year run in the USL. You made the playoffs both years. You launched a new product in Nashville that was, by and large, viewed as a success. And now, on, like you said, on to the next chapter, bigger and better, and let's find out what the roster looks like. Here's the one thing you need to know if you don't know much about soccer and want to get into it. Here's what makes the NFL so hard is acquisition of talent is equal for all 32 teams, and it's very difficult to build a roster that is vastly more superior than another team. That's not how it works in soccer. If John Ingram and the ownership group of Nashville SC and Ian Ayre, if they want to spend the money to build one of the best rosters in the MLS, they can do it because there are no restrictions. So that's sort of what you need to know. And that's why they invested so heavily in the USL. It's why they were good the last 2 years. It's sort of on the ownership group to say, how much do you want to spend? And if the ownership group wants to spend, then all of a sudden this could be a very good team very quickly right out of the gate in the MLS because they've got a coach who's won a championship. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I want to see them. Because what do we know about Nashville? You're going to stay at the party if it's cool, right? If it's not cool and it's not hot, people are going to leave.
Mm-hmm.
If you're winning games and you're scoring goals and you've got a good competitive team and you're about to open a new stadium in a couple years, you better have a good party because you're going to try to charge people to come to that party. So they can do it. It's all about how much do they want to invest. And I expect so far they've done a lot of investing, and let's see what it looks like.
If I am Nashville SC, I'm sitting down and I'm saying, okay, I am going to do what the Nashville Predators do. I am not going to do what the Tennessee Titans do. That'll get me on the right track to success.
And there's no salary cap or guaranteed contracts in soccer, so you could just buy a bunch of Ryan Johansons and Matt Duchesnes if you want.
There you go.
You could just go get all of them. There's no limitation. If you want to spend the money, go spend the money. So,
all right, Stick to Sports is coming up next here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. There's definitely something wrong with the line. Not the telephone line. But the offensive line in Nashville. What would it cost you, Derek Mason, to get under center for one snap with the Tennessee Titans offensive line protecting your backside?
Look at his head's hurting already. You had to
pay me like $20 million for that play.
For one play?
Yeah.
I don't blame you.
That's a nice – that's Willie Taggart's style of work right there.
Exactly.
$17 million to not coach our team. Mm-hmm.
Give it to me.
All right. We're going to give it to you right now. We'll stick to sports.
The world is a crazy place.
Crazy sounding pretty good right now.
Let's lighten the mood.
After all that seriousness, you're just going to crumple it up and throw in the trash.
Basically.
And stick to sports. And now, on Morning Drive.
All right, boys, stick to sports. As always, on Morning Drive at 8:45, and it's brought to you by D-Mace.
The good folks at Decorated Den Interior. Stick with the pros at Decorated Den when you're ready to decorate your home, office, and outdoor spaces. Request a complimentary appointment, which is free, online at decoratingden.com.
Number one.
What was that at the end?
Just a remix.
Remix. All right, so I feel like traveling is not a hard thing to do. I feel like when you go to an airport, you go to the gate that you need to go to get on the plane. You get on the plane, you have a layover here in the middle or whatever, or you go straight to your destination. For a former wide receiver by the name of Randy Moss, it's a little difficult because he was going to Bristol, but then he turned out in a different place.
I want to give a shout out to everybody in Bristol, Tennessee. I had to call up here. I had an 8 o'clock. I had an 8 o'clock meeting. Stopped off at my son's last football game of his senior year. The pilot tells me we have about an hour and 5 hour and 10 minute flight. Cool. I lay back, put my hat over my eyes, lay the visor down. Once we land, I'm looking for the Sheraton, the hotel that connects at Bradley. I said, "Hey, where are we?" He said, "We're in Bristol." I said, "Bristol?
Oh, man.
Bristol, Tennessee." I'm supposed to be in Bristol, Connecticut. So, fans, team, I'm just glad I'm
here.
I'm just glad.
You're here.
Appreciate
you're
it.
Here.
Boys, I mean, you guys know Everything With Me is a movie and a movie quote.
Oh, wow.
Randy Moss pulled the Kevin McAllister from Home Alone.
Yes.
He got on the wrong flight. He didn't land in Florida. He landed in New York City.
Oh, wow.
Now, so was this a private jet?
I guess this is
this is commercial.
This is commercial, probably first class commercial flight.
Well, there are no flights into, I don't think there are airports in either Bristol. So I don't know. Yeah. You can't fly a big commercial plane into either Bristol. You have to fly into Hartford or I think Knoxville. Again, maybe Johnson City. I don't know. I'm assuming this was like a chartered flight. Because you don't talk to the pilot either normally, right? Like,
I don't know.
On commercial flights? When's the last time you guys talked to the pilot?
I'd be very surprised if they're flying guys up for NFL Countdown on charter flights.
Well, I was assuming Moss was...
Yeah, Moss I would be surprised if they're doing that for
anybody.
Well,
technically, he went to go visit his kid, so he could have took anything. I don't think ESPN was probably paying for
that.
That's
what I'm saying.
So it may have been a charter flight, but the fact that he didn't really specify what Bristol he actually wanted to go to.
But you're a grown man. You get on the wrong flight, that's your fault.
That's what I'm
saying. I totally agree with you.
Like, you're walking down the runway, you look at all the billboards with, okay, flight departs at this time, arrives at that time. Randy Moss pulled a Kevin McAllister here.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's his
Even
fault.
If it was a charter flight, there was a mix-up somewhere, somebody.
I guess does he just assume when he says Bristol that he doesn't know that there's another, like...
He just, everybody knows that I'm going to Bristol, Connecticut.
Well, there's a Bristol in Pennsylvania as well.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Bristols.
But what's funny is, so you see Randy Moss getting on your flight, and obviously you see him on TV if you're watching, ESPN on NFL, and you see Randy Moss, he's like, why the hell is he going to Bristol, Tennessee? Like, don't you ask yourself that question, why is Randy Moss going to Bristol, Tennessee?
I mean, he's a country boy who likes to fish. I don't know. Maybe he's going to Thunder Valley there. Who knows?
Bristol Motor Speedway?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, racing up there.
He does like racing. Speaking of racing in Bristol, racing Tennessee, team? Isn't there a Randy Moss who does NASCAR announcing? I believe.
Yeah.
I think there's a Randy Moss who does NASCAR and horse racing,
well,
isn't there?
I'm pretty sure Randy Moss right. is into racing as well.
Oh, is
so,
he?
I want to say he's in that. Is it Brad Edwards? Brad Doherty, the former basketball player who also loves NASCAR.
Yeah. So. How about that?
What do you do? Like, so the quote is, stopped off at my son's last football game of his senior year. That sounds like the pilot was like making a pit stop so he could watch his son's football game. And then, like, continuing en route to Bristol. Like, there's so many questions I have about this.
Great wide receiver, man. Horrible travel.
Fantastic.
Straight cash, homie.
He can catch footballs, not planes.
Number two.
All right, fellas. The sensation is back. Now, this is the biggest sensation since the British invasion and music. The spicy chicken sandwich at Popeyes is back. It is back.
Hell.
And look, it actually helps out because, you know, remember we said what's in the sandwich, right? So Deshaun Watson did a post-game interview and he asked what helped heal his eye.
How's the eye doing?
The eye's great. You know, I got some, I tell you the key. The key is it was the Popeyes spicy chicken sandwiches that I ate this week.
Come on. That
helped the eye, so make sure you know.
There's a nice little plug.
What a shameless.
He got some money for that one.
He saw that Montez Sweat commercial. He was like, he ain't the only one that can make these commercials.
My favorite part of this all is fast food beef. We've got not actual beef because we know that's not a thing, but like fast food beef here because they clearly launched this chicken sandwich on Sunday for a reason. Who do they compete with? Who's their number one competitor?
Chick-fil-A. Yeah.
Who's not open on Sunday?
Chick-fil-A.
They are clearly going right after Chick-fil-A,
when they announced,
which is awesome.
When they announced that the spicy chicken sandwich was coming back, so you know when you're traveling on the road, they got exit here for these different restaurants. So their hype video was a Chick-fil-A logo and their logo, and then they like took the new label on there and it says open Sunday right next to the Chick-fil-A video.
Oh yeah.
So it gets real. Stephon Diggs had the spicy chicken is back like cleats yesterday. No wonder why the Vikings lost pretty bad yesterday too. So
let me ask you guys right here, because you guys know I love a good power ranking. So Chick-fil-A, Popeyes, KFC, Zaxby's, what is your go? If you're going to lower yourself,
none of the above.
But if you had to, I know you.
He's both.
You don't want to eat processed stuff.
No, I'll buy local because I know it'll be.
Oh Jesus! Can't you just answer the question?
Well, I don't like any of them.
You don't like any of them?
No.
You would never eat any of them?
No, not never. Like if I'm gonna die,
that's what I'm saying. So if you had to eat one, which one are you going?
Probably Zaxby's.
Chick-fil-A.
I think
first.
Zaxby's is very underrated.
But it's very pricey.
Chick-fil-A, then Zaxby's, and then the other ones. Like
I just am
Popeyes
not a, I'm just not a huge Chick-fil-A fan.
I think Chick-fil-A is overrated.
I think it's a little overrated as well.
I'll go Chick-fil-A, then I'll go Zaxby's, Popeyes, and I have to throw Bojangles in there.
Why though. Chick-fil-A? Why are they better?
And their chicken sandwiches are
it's
amazing.
Just it's a frozen patty out of a truck. I don't know, it's the same stuff as everywhere else.
Hey, they're still amazing. Whatever they do to it, it's good.
And the thing is, it's still better than most fast food. Like, I admit that it's better than fast food. What I don't understand, though, to the overrated portion, like, why are people in line for an hour for fast food? Like, that's what I don't understand. Why are you sitting in line for an hour for this?
What? At
any of them.
Popeyes?
I don't know. Chick-fil-A drive-thru? It's worse than Starbucks.
Drive past any Chick-fil-A, and there's six cars already in line. And I'm like, why would you wait that long for that? I don't understand.
That's at every establishment. If people deem the establishment good, I mean, they're going to wait. Just like you go to downtown at the chicken spot downtown. People are waiting in line for it.
That's worth it, though. Like, that's like actually made hot chicken in...
I understand, but people say it's worth it for Chick-fil-A.
But here's the thing.
I guess.
As annoying as it is sitting for 28 minutes in a drive-thru at Starbucks, it's for coffee, and coffee is an everyday consumption for most people that drink coffee. Mm-hmm. Not everybody eats Chick-fil-A every single day.
Some people do.
And they're closed on Sunday.
Some people do eat it Monday through Friday, maybe not Saturday.
They won't be living for much longer if they do.
I just love that there's like chicken beef in the fast food world that
we've got. When did the chicken wars start?
We've got this Popeye's Chick-fil-A thing that's now
battling. I don't know what they put in that chicken sandwich, but people are
losing their minds.
Not Deshaun Watson's eyes.
People are losing their everlasting minds.
It fixes your vision.
I don't know if you guys watch The Boondocks, but there's an episode of The Boondocks where people become addicted to this chicken. It's like a KFC knockoff chicken, and people become addicted to it, and everybody's fighting.
That's what's going on right now.
We just had this long conversation. You asked to rank all this stuff and did not mention KFC.
No, I mentioned KFC.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay, like the OG fried chicken place, and it's...
I used to like the popcorn chicken back in the day.
Oh, that's just not real. Oh, my God.
I know.
Don't get me wrong. I love a...
But you're talking to a guy who drinks vodka every day like it's his job.
Give me a fried...
Health isn't really my issue.
A fried chicken thigh. A fried chicken thigh made well is about the most delicious thing you'll ever taste in your life, and it will kill you. But God, it's so delicious.
Do you like dark meat over white meat?
Dark meat over white meat, 100%.
Really?
It's more flavorful.
It is flavorful.
It's not like... And it's more moist. Ask any chef on the planet, they'll tell you. There's more flavor in dark meat than there is in white meat.
I've always been a breast guy myself.
Who doesn't
I'm a thigh guy. Give me the thigh.
Breasts are good.
This is the good. This is the
thighs are good.
This is why the wife and I have a great time eating whole chickens. She'll eat all the white meat. I'll eat all the dark meat. We're good to go.
There you go.
No arguing over chicken parts.
You ever go to the grocery store and buy a chicken already made, like in the rotisserie?
Yeah, okay. It's good for the kids. Mm-hmm. Like it's real super easy to grab one of those and then use it for kids' lunches and stuff. But I do the whole chicken on the green egg. You just put two of them, like two of those little young chickens. Mm-hmm. Throw them on the egg.
It's hard for me to do that.
Oh, you don't like meat?
Well, you don't
eat
meat.
No, even when I did.
Or poultry.
Even when I did.
You eat salmon.
I want to cook it. I don't want somebody else to cook it. I'm just weird about people cooking food.
Especially when I
don't see them cook it.
I like cooking it better, too.
Smells good going down the aisle.
Because when it's just weird.
It does.
You know, some people have their dogs in the kitchen, cats on the counter, don't wash their hands. I'm not dealing with that. I don't want your food.
Well, how many cats are on the counter at, like, the Publix?
I'm just saying.
Like, are there cats in the back? Running Publix?
No, I'm saying people's food in general. It's like, man, I don't know.
I don't trust people's macaroni.
Oh, I'm not eating everybody's macaroni.
Yeah,
you know what? All three of you?
Yeah, what's going on with you guys?
You guys are all snobs.
Some people are not sanitary.
I got news for you.
Derek is clean.
We're all going to die from something.
I know, but some people, I don't want to.
So live your best life.
I don't want to die on somebody else's macaroni.
I think, was it Friday? And this is not about the chef or anything, but this just shows you how nasty people are. Walk into the restroom. Three other guys in there. Use the bathroom. Boom, boom, boom.
A lot of dudes. You want boom, boom, boom?
I'm waiting. You know how you got to wait in line sometimes. There's only two stalls. So I wait in line, boom. So two dudes leave. They just leave right out the bathroom.
Nobody washed their hands?
You nasty little jokers. Y'all just nasty.
And you just watch them eating like a chicken breast.
Yeah, putting their fingers all in their mouth.
I realized something.
So you nasty. Just wash your hands.
I had another observation at a restaurant recently that I am not weirded out by a hair. In my food.
Oh, I'm weirded out by hair. If I see a hair food, I will not eat anything. You don't even bring me anything.
Like, oh, no, I'll tell the manager. I'll be like, hey, this is because I want my money back. Like, I'll tell. But, like, it doesn't.
No, I'm not eating the food.
For whatever reason, I'm not grossed out by it.
Like, you just eat around it?
No, just take it off? I'll throw it away. But if I'm looking at a plate of food, like, I'll let the manager know, like, kind of to the side. I'm not trying to, like, call anybody out because it's not, like, the waiter's fault that it happened. It's somebody in the back's fault that it happened, right?
So when you see a hair, you call someone and be like, hey, there's a hair in my food. And he's like, well, I'm still going to eat this, though. So.
No, it's more about, like, if you get it home, if you've taken it home or whatever. Like, if I'm in the restaurant, I'll say something. But if you get it home and I've got this whole plate of food and that's my meal.
I'm throwing it away.
And I throw the hair away. Like,
I'm not touching it. I'm throwing everything away.
I'm in the minority. I'm clearly in the minority on this.
Maybe $20 or $30, but I'm throwing everything away.
It just doesn't gross me out.
Even if I see flies over the food, I'm not eating it. Like at a cookout, if flies are over the food, not touching it.
Are they touching it or are they just flying around?
If they touch, because you know they're not just flying over it. They're going to sit down. So I have to be the first person in line to get my food. If I'm not the first person in line, I see flies on it, I'm not touching it. That's just the way I am, man.
You're not invited to my picnic.
I'm not touching it. It's like, put something over the food, put plastic or something over the food, cover the food. And people, when you get your food, cover it back up, okay?
Because half of the time, people don't fully use the full aluminum foil, leave a spot open.
But you just put it on top.
you don't actually
seal it. But that's better than nothing, though. Like, just putting the foil on top and just sitting it there is still better than nothing.
Yeah. You open it up, there's flies in there. No, don't want
If there's flies in there, I'm not eating it either. But I don't have to be first in line, Derek.
I got to be first in line. I got to see the food. It's got to be. I got to see the food.
Who cooked this?
I got to know who cooked it.
Folks, you wonder why I drink vodka. Darren McFarland, Preds Talk, next. Local.